Hello, this is Elsie Wolfleck. I'm here at the North Virginia College.
My name is Dr. Richard E. Littlebear, and I'm president of Chief Tallknife College in Langdale, Montana, on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation in southeastern Montana, and about 42 miles from the site of the Battle of Little Bighorn.
What type of classes do you teach or work with?
We offer the same courses that other community colleges offer in the first 2 years of any four-year college. In addition to that, we also offer cultural classes dealing with the Northern Cheyenne people. We also offer language classes dealing with the Northern Cheyenne language. In fact, 2 weeks from now, I will be teaching a class on Cheyenne linguistics to our teachers of our culture and our language in the K-12 school systems that are on or near the reservation. We are accredited by the Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities.
I'm a student who is interested in teaching. What kinds of things can students take with them as teaching tools?
As a language teacher, right within the language itself, there are embedded a lot of cultural concepts, spiritual concepts. And those are the things that people never or hardly ever talk about in mainstream schools. And those are the aspects of our language that we try to emphasize in addition to learning how to speak it and learning how to read and write it. And I think that for anybody who wants to be able to teach their own Native American languages, they have to start by understanding and being able to speak the language long before they are able to read and write the language. For many years, our languages were oral. It wasn't until the advent of the white school system that pencil and paper became very important to our people. And now it's really difficult to wean themselves away from using paper and pencil. It's amazing how in such a short time that a primarily oral language becomes a pencil and paper type of language. And that usually stalls the oral development of a language learner. It will inhibit fluency. It will inhibit pronunciation. You got to hear the person speaking, either electronically or in person. After a few years, you can start reading or writing it. It took me many years to learn how to read and write Cheyenne, and I could have lived the rest of my life without having to learn that. But because of the certification that we do at the college for our language and cultural teachers, we have to have some sort of standard. And one of the standards there is standardizing that writing system of the Northern Cheyenne people and having to learn how to read and write it.
Does the classrooms involve elders that speak the language, or how does it engage like a community partnership?
People that we certify as our teachers are generally elders because mm-hmm. The youngest speakers of our language on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation are 40 and above. That automatically makes any person speaking the Cheyenne language eligible for Class 7 certification. Right now, we have about 26 people who are eligible to be teachers in the K-12 classrooms. At the college, we don't need this kind of certification. And I'm not certified to be a Class 7 teacher, primarily because I devise a test for its reliability and validity, and I'm always kind of the people who do the board of examiners who do the examining are always kind of afraid to test me. So even though I know how to read and write Cheyenne, I've never been certified for a test that I devised. I always think this is kind of it's kind of like I set it up for myself or something. If I ever get out of being the president of the college and decide I just want to teach Cheyenne language, then I'll definitely take the test. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like It would be really embarrassing if I flunked the test that I devised myself, but that's not been a consideration. It's just these other practical concerns, like having people who can test me. I feel comfortable with it. Mm-hmm.
So what is your inspiration?
For me, I came back to the reservation after having spent approximately 10 years in Alaska. And I came back primarily to teach the Cheyenne language. I was hired as the Dean of Cultural Affairs at the college. And I thought that's how I would spend the rest of my life, is just teaching the Cheyenne language. But when the position of the president came available, and I had over 20 years of administrative experience and had a doctorate in school administration, I decided I'd go for it, and thinking that I would be able to promote the Cheyenne language from the highest office in the college. I've been able to do that. My inspiration for promoting the Cheyenne language is that languages are who we are. If you're bilingual, that's who you are. And if you're bilingual in the Native American language, that becomes even more crucial, because right there within that language is embedded your identity as an individual and as a cultural person. You have all the background of the language and of the culture and the spirituality that are embedded within the words of that language. And this is not only for Native American languages, it's true in all languages, that there are certain connotations, certain nuances that apply directly to spiritual expression, for instance. And the other thing that inspires me about wanting to save the Cheyenne language is that it is a language of joy, it's a language of humor, it's a language of exchanging information, it's a language of transmitting the culture on to the succeeding generations. It's a language that really embeds who you are, especially in a world that is so given to typecasting and stereotyping Native Americans in a highly negative sense. I think you have to have a really strong identity with whoever you are as a Native American to be able to stand the negative stereotypes that are so abundant in the world around us, in the world that we now find ourselves in. In order to have this strong identification for your culture and for your language and for who you are, you have to be able to have a place to be grounded. And I think the language does that. I think participation in ceremonies, participation in drumming and singing, and just being around people who speak the language and who identify with a culture is really strong grounding for one's identity. And the identity is one of the things that helps people succeed. A positive identification with one's identity is really a very good inspiration for succeeding in life and in school.
What are some examples of success stories, or even some of the difficulties that you might have faced?
One of the success stories that we have are people beginning to look at the Cheyenne language on our reservation is something that people can be proud to speak speak the language, because so many of the government and religious policies were aimed at eradicating, killing off people who spoke these languages. Now that no longer happens, but the eradication and the massacring of our cultures and our languages is still going on even today, not in a very overt sense, but in a highly covert sense, in that we are surrounded daily by the English language. The English language is a good language. I don't mean to put it in a negative light, but it is also a very voracious language. It's omnivorous. It just gobbles up all the other languages around it. Well, those of us who speak it think of that as a negative. It really isn't, because that's what made the English language such a strong language in and of itself. And that's the kind of characteristics that I try to instill teachers when I'm teaching them our language, that we've got to incorporate other aspects of the language around us so that we can refer to things that are occurring that weren't around back in the 1870s and 1850s that weren't around and that we had no words for. But now, in order to keep our languages robust, we have to be able to refer to things that are around us, like swine flu, for instance, or HIV, or even computers, the bytes and the bits that go into computers, the components of a computer. Those are becoming very important, and yet we have no words for them in our language. And if a language does not keep up with the emerging social phenomena in the world that we find ourselves in, then that language is headed for dormancy and eventual death. So we got to keep it referring to new social phenomena, new mechanical objects and stuff like that to keep them going.
Mm-hmm. So for any other people or students out there in the communities who want to pick up their native language, what kind of advice would you give them?
It all depends on how much the language has been lost in any given community. We often think that just because we're Cheyenne or just because we're Lummi or just because we're Native Americans that we're automatically wired in for that language. We aren't. We have to learn languages just like we have to go through the stages of language acquisition, just like somebody else. It's the same thing as if I were going to try to learn Greek. I would have to go through certain stages of language acquisition to learn Greek. And for many of our students, especially for those communities that have had a lot of language loss, maybe their speakers are 40, maybe 50, maybe only 60 years older and above can speak those languages. That means techniques like oral language techniques. That means using Cheyenne as a second language teaching techniques. Those have to be incorporated, and we have to realize that. The other thing is that we have to teach our elders that not everybody speaks fluently when they start trying to learn a language, and sometimes elders will ridicule people who are trying to learn their languages, and that's a perfect way to kill any inspiration or aspirations that the language learner has of learning that language. If a elder ridicules a youngster, that's a really big no-no. And yet it's really difficult to tell elders that, because they are elders. And so you have a dilemma. I'm an elder now. I can tell them to shut up and not do that. but it takes a very special case. I've been really promoting Cheyenne on the reservation, because I like speaking Cheyenne. I'm fluent in Cheyenne, but as fluent as anybody can be. And I also have the added ability to be able to read and write Cheyenne. So, and those are acquired. Those are skills I acquired on my own, because I respect the language enough, and I want people to know that what you can do in the English language, you can also do in the Cheyenne language. So I really promote Cheyenne. I almost do it shamelessly. mm-hmm. on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation. And as a result of that, as a collateral benefit to me, being able to read and write Cheyenne and being able to sort of a dabbler in Cheyenne linguistics, I have been able to travel all over the world because I do this. I understand how language transmission goes, how cultural ideas can be transmitted through a language. I also understand what makes a language, what makes Cheyenne hang together when you can analyze it and dissect it and talk about it and see what prefixes and suffixes, and we call them preverbs and postverbs in our language. But understanding all of that kind of stuff has made me has given me the opportunity to travel to Europe, to England, to Asia, to Bangkok and Jakarta, Indonesia and New Zealand and Australia. And the really good thing about that is that other people pay to hear me talk about my language. So it's not a drain on the Northern Cheyenne coffers or Northern Cheyenne or the Tribal College coffers for me to be able to do that. And I go about promoting the Cheyenne language that way. It might seem funny that how is it going to benefit the Northern Cheyenne people to talk about the Cheyenne language in Bangkok, Thailand? Well, it's not a stretch, because these people who are interested in these languages can support not only the Cheyenne language but other indigenous languages throughout the United States through spiritual support and through economic support. And that's why I do that. Because the Cheyenne language is not the only one in this dire predicament of nearing dormancy, unless we do something about it.
In preserving indigenous languages, what are those kind of ways that, I don't know, like you said, England or Europe or even our own country, like, work towards preserving that language?
Yeah, I think these languages here in the United States were the first ones that were here, and yet they're the first ones that are dying. So it seems kind of self-contradictory to that the first ones that were here are also the first ones that are dying. And if that were just true in and of itself, then that would be reason enough to do that, to try to save the languages. But it goes beyond that. It circles back around to this idea of increasing the positive identification of our people with their culture and with who they are. Because right now, on the reservation, we see a lot of our kids grabbing for what could be characterized as the inner-city ghetto type of culture of the black people. And we see the rap music, we hear the rap music, a lot of the affectations of our people mimic the black culture. They also mimic gang behavior in a positive sense. We have the same kind of characteristics. We have all those elements that make it so appealing for our youngsters. The rap culture has its own lingo. We can do that with our own languages. We have our own turf, which are the reservations. That's really a positive way, positive turf. We're still protecting it from the United States government, sometimes through the courts and through our expressions of trying to determine what the curricula may be in our schools. We also have our own songs, just as gang culture and inner city culture have, and they express who we are. We also have the sort of rhythm-based songs and languages that the rap culture have. So there are a lot of characteristics that we share with them, but our characteristics are on a positive basis. They are not meant to hurt people. They are not meant to extort anything from people. They are meant to promote who we are and how we go about doing that is by re-identifying with who we are. And if our youth could understand that, it would be so much better.
Is there anything else you want to add?
Well, I'm really glad that to get to meet you. I want our people to understand that on the reservation, and even though I know you haven't spent too much time on the reservation, that people from our culture can succeed in other areas. One of the surest ways to gain this kind of success is to get educated, to learn skills that will carry you through life. For myself, a lot of people always ask me, how come you're spending time on the reservation? Well, for one thing, I'm from that reservation. I love being on the reservation. I got a four-wheel drive pickup, especially to go out, spend time out in the hills, regardless of what the weather may be. And that's been really positive for me. But the other thing is the education that I have allowed me to choose to live on a reservation. I could go any place and still make a good living. But I choose to be on the reservation because it's given me a lot of alternatives. And I want everybody to experience that, just as you are experiencing it here.
Yeah, I think I'm definitely interested in language for Lummi because I grew up here. But I'm really interested in Northern Cheyenne language now. So my dad really wants me to go over there.
Yeah, come on.
Come check it out. So I think I'm just going to have to do that.
Yeah, and if you come over, we'll have you talk to students and just share your experiences with them. Mm-hmm. That would be really positive. You could do that sometime. Mm-hmm. So let me know.
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks.
And thanks for asking me to be part of this interview. Mm-hmm. Appreciate that.